It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning into our episode on Friday, the 22nd of January, 2021. We are really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have five fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hey, everyone.
Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist. The second, joining us in studio, is Mr. Ira Banks, who is the Vice President, Community Development Officer for the First Bank and also the Dean of Leadership Mobile, Class of 2021. The third, joining us by phone, will be Mr. Stephen Barnett, who is the owner of the Flip Flop Bookshop in Daphne, Alabama. And the fourth, also joining us by phone, is Ms. Casey Johnson, who is the Adaptive and Inclusive Coordinator for the town of Kennersville, North Carolina's Parks and Recreation Department. And last, but no wise least, our good friend Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So, how's everybody doing tonight?
We are fantastic, aren't you? You feeling good?
I'm good.
Yeah, we're feeling good. We're ready to do this.
All right. Well, we are going to correct ourselves from before. I actually said Mr. Banks instead of Mr. Bates. So let's get that corrected right off the bat. So,
yes.
That's what happens when you are actually typing out your notes at the very last minute. You run the risk of actually typing in something wrong. So, for the agenda, in the top half of the hour, we'll do a citizen spotlight with Mr. Ira Bates and discuss the Leadership Mobile Class of 2021 program. In the bottom half of the hour, we'll do a quick small business spotlight with Mr. Stephen Barnett, and then we'll do a second citizen spotlight with Ms. Casey Johnson. Now for the headlines. The first headline comes from the New York Times. It reads, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Nine Ways to Honor His Legacy. It was written by Alexis Solosky, and it was published on January 14th, 2021. The second headline comes from CNN. It reads, Biden and Harris push for unity during inaugural special. It was published on January 21st, 2021. The third headline comes from AL.com. It reads, Baseball icon Hank Aaron dead at 86. It was written by Mark Inabinette, and it was published on January 22nd, 2021. So now that we've got the headlines out of the way, let's focus on something positive. I know that as we continue to make this transition that, you know, even in death, we can look back and see some positive things that actually happened in life.
Exactly.
So we know that Mr. Hank Aaron, his family was actually members of my church when I was growing up there at Greater Morningstar Baptist Church at 401 Donald Street in Tolmansville, Alabama. And his mom and grandma were actually very integral in my development. And his sister, as a matter of fact, was one of my Sunday school teachers.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. You know, it's devastating for this, not just this community, but, you know, just across the nation, the impact that Hank Aaron has had. And we just pray for his family, and we just are thankful for all that he has done and brought to our lives and to everything that we know around here. So,
you know, a lot of times here at Kennedy for Alabama, we focus on the political. But tonight in particular, it's one of those refreshing evenings. So we're going to transition from the political, not that we're going to get away from that as our core brand, because we know we have plenty of things to discuss and debate on that dimension. But this is one of those nights that I've really looked forward to because it gives us the opportunity to move beyond that and just kind of talk to some of our friends and neighbors here in Alabama to understand how it is they are having a positive impact on their community. So with that, I will turn to my good friend Ira here to my left. And Ira, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. I am really glad to have you. Obviously, we've gotten to know each other here over the last 3 or 4 years, and I know that you're a mover and shaker in this community, so I appreciate you sitting in a chair tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
So, hey, before we get into the specifics of Leadership Mobile, can you just take a little bit of time and introduce yourself to the listening audience? Just talk about, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school and church, and just kind of how you got to this point in your journey.
Very good. Well, thank you again for having me on. Just real quickly to tell you a little bit about myself. I am a native Mobilian.
Okay.
I grew up here in Mobile, in West Mobile. Went to St. Catherine School, which is no longer there, but I went to St. Catherine from first to fifth grade, Azalea Middle School, and then Davidson, graduated from Davidson High School.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to represent for my Shaw Rebels since we are not a high school anymore. But I definitely got to represent for that. But yes, educated in the Mobile County Public School System.
Absolutely.
All right. All right. So what did you do after high school?
Well, after high school, I decided to I was going to play football for Davidson, and I wanted to go and of course, like most young men, wanted to join the college football ranks and then go to the NFL.
All right.
God would have something else for me to do. I end up staying home. I went to a lot of universities, colleges.
Okay.
Quickly to go show you. My transition, I actually went to, at that time, Faulkner State Junior College.
Mm-hmm.
Then I left and went to South Alabama.
Right.
Went to Montgomery AUM.
Mm-hmm.
Troy State University of Montgomery.
Okay.
Alabama Aviation Technical College in Ozark, Alabama.
Okay.
To learn how to fly.
Wow.
Then I left there, made my way back, and came home because I was always in flux, doing different things. And end up going to Bishop State, and then finishing from the University of Mobile.
Okay. All right. Well, one of the things I love about your particular journey, and we had the opportunity the first time that I learned about your background, is it's not where you start.
Yes.
It's where you finish.
Absolutely.
And if there is a message that we want to send out to the community, it's really that message of grit and perseverance, that regardless of what the obstacles were, you didn't let anything kind of slow you down.
Right.
So that's a beautiful thing.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And it's just one of those things that's a testament that, I had parents that, I always tell people that I grew up with good parents, and I think that is very important today.
Yes.
I had my mom and my dad. They taught me to go to school. They taught me to go to church. And because of that, it was not if you're going to school or not. It's just which school are you going to go to.
Exactly.
And I promise you, they did not have an idea of that I would go to that many different schools. But in that process, I was actually learning not only myself, but learning the ethic of work and sticking with something.
That stick-to-itiveness.
Yes.
A lot of times we talk about it as grit and perseverance. That's a life skill that applies no matter where you end up from a professional perspective.
Correct.
And that's why I often tell people that everyone's path is not linear,
right?
But everyone's path ultimately goes to a destination. And so that's where for the young folks who may be listening to this, hey, if you fall, get back up.
That's
just
right.
Keep making sure that you fall forward as
right.
opposed to falling backwards. So
Absolutely.
So thank you for that.
Yes, sir.
So now when you started to get into your professional career, what is your area of expertise? What do you kind of do in your day job?
Well, my day job today is I am the community development officer for the First Bank.
Okay.
I handle things that relate to CRA, Community Reinvestment Act.
Right.
So we're making sure that the loans, investments, and services are there and appropriate for basically keep us from discriminating.
Okay.
Redlining, right. If you're familiar with redlining.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do on a daily basis.
And so for the listening audience, redlining was a concept that existed for the most part before the Fair Housing Act in 1968. And it was a method that was used to basically classify neighborhoods. And if you were in a neighborhood that was targeted, it may be a little bit harder for you to get a loan to build your dream house in that particular area. And it was one of those classic tools of discrimination that was used prior to the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Any other explanations or clarification that you want to provide for folks who may not be familiar?
Well, we do that and we make sure that we scrub the data.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I tell people all the time is that, I go out and I teach financial education because that's something that's very important for people to understand.
Oh, my gosh, isn't it?
But one of the things that they don't understand is that it's very difficult for banks to discriminate without knowing it.
Oh, okay, I see what
right?
you mean. Yeah.
Without knowing it. You know you're discriminating in today's times.
Right.
Because we're scrubbing data. We're looking at it saying, okay, if you have a credit score of 710 and this person has a credit score of 650, right?
Right.
And they got a loan and somebody didn't get a loan. It's like we're looking at, okay, we're looking at race and gender.
Okay.
So all of a sudden it's like a guy with a credit score was 610, but this woman had a 750. She didn't get the loan. What's the difference?
Okay, okay. I see what you're saying.
See, so we look at that very, very, very critically to make sure that that's not going on.
Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for explaining that. I think that that's a whole nother show
yes,
we can dive into another time. But thank you for that explanation. So now what really got me passionate about doing this particular episode was you and I had the opportunity to partner a little bit earlier when the Leadership Mobile 2021 class had a session on human services.
That's correct.
And so I was blessed and honored to be able to participate in that as a facilitator. And I know that you are the dean of the overall program. And so I thought it would be a wonderful gift to the audience just to spend a little bit of time talking about that particular program specifically and just kind of about, you know, leadership in general and what the vision is for the program and how it ends up making us a better Mobile.
Right. Well, thank you. Well, I tell you what, it's hard for me to explain it in a nutshell, but I try my best to do it this way.
Okay.
My background, because I spent 7.5 years at United Way as a development director there, development manager there, and then moved on to Habitat for Humanity here in Mobile to be the development director, I've had the unique opportunity to see the community in a place that most people don't see on a daily basis.
Okay, I can see that.
I've always seen the most affluent people in the community, and I also seen the most destitute people in the community at the same time.
Wow.
And that is a unique perspective because I have an affinity for both groups and really realized that, guess what? We all needed each other.
Absolutely.
The person that was destitute, looking for something to eat, looking for a place to live, looking for clothing. Right? Needed that person who of affluency.
Right.
But the person of affluency needed the person there in order to bless.
Absolutely.
So it worked hand in hand. So with that being said, I've worked a lot in the community to learn leadership, to learn different aspects of our community, health and human services, the environment, and so on and so forth. So when I was asked to be a part of Leadership Mobile, I've been part of Leadership Mobile now roughly probably about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I've gone through the program. I've been on the steering committee. I've headed up I've worked with the youth leadership,
right?
Which my daughter just graduated from last year.
Congratulations, so, Ryan.
So with that being said, I've just been really, really involved with that.
Okay.
So when they asked me to be leadership the dean this year, I had done so much. I was like, I'm good.
Okay. So you were the reluctant servant, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm good. And I thought about it, and I said, you know what? This is a great opportunity and a great platform. For those who are not familiar with Mobile United, it is such a platform that allows you to voice your opinion about race,
right,
about our community, in a safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what part of the spectrum you're on. You know, if you're Republican, Democrat, black or white, gay or straight, you can come there, voice your opinions in a safe environment, and let us as leaders try to figure out how we can work together.
Sure.
That's really what it's about. So Leadership Mobile asked me to be a part of it, and each year you have a theme.
Okay.
So this happened. It just happened to be just divine intervention because we thought about this way before what was going on.
Oh, yes.
So this was in 2019. So we were talking about this, and she says, she's the exec director. She asked me, she says, what do you want your theme to be? And I said, love. I want us to love. And I didn't have any idea how we're going to put it together.
Right, right.
But I knew that the greatest law of God was to love. Love him and love your neighbor as yourself.
You know, it was interesting. I was in a conversation about this earlier in the week, and it took us right back for all of us who are spiritually grounded, regardless of the denomination that you associated with. The central underlying theme of all religions is love. And as a Christian, I actually find myself going back to the great commandment, which you said
in
the King James Version would be, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is likened to it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And just to anchor the concept of leadership with love, I thought was it was simultaneously very simple and easy to understand, but brilliant.
Yes.
Because for us to be in a community that is as spiritually grounded as we are here in South Alabama, it just seemed like something we could all agree on.
Yes, sir. And it was one of those things that when we sat down and we started thinking about it, because Leadership Mobile, we tackle diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We tackle economic and social injustices. We handle health and human services. We talk about education. We talk about government.
Right.
So when you speak about love, there's no way that you can actually talk about any of these things if you're true to yourself.
Of course.
That love can't be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how this is actually morphed and turned into what you see today.
Absolutely. And that is an absolutely beautiful thing. And that's part of the reason why I was so honored personally to be able to, you know, make a small contribution in the afternoon that I did. So let's take just one step back and go beyond the theme itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about the type of people who get recruited to be in the program, what is it that they're kind of expected to take away? And then how do they end up continuing to have a positive impact on the community after the program's over?
Very good. Well, the thing is, the participants come from all walks of life, all careers. I have a lot of PhDs, medical doctors, lawyers, bankers, housewives, moms, you know, everybody's in the class. And so they're, you know, they basically are nominated to be a part of this. They have a nominating process, and they go through interview process, and then they're chosen. Okay, these are already, and like I tell them, they're already leaders in the
community.
We're coming here to sharpen. Iron sharpens iron.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn a lot from each other, even in the class.
Yep.
So what happens is, what we want them to do is take away things that they have not seen in the community.
Okay.
And so give you an example. When we spoke about diversity, I wanted them to understand that we were going to be raw.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted you to see the truth.
Right.
We as leaders must define reality.
Mm-hmm.
And we define the reality for what it really is.
Exactly.
Not what I think it is or what you think it is, but what it is actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if I grab your shoulder, you're not thinking, you're not saying, well, is he grabbing my shoulder? No, that's the reality. I am grabbing your shoulder. That's the truth.
Right.
So we have to, you know, we have to show that. So what we did was we just put it out there and said, if we truly loved each other in this community, would we be having this conversation right now?
Right.
And the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
So something is amiss. And so what we want to do is we want to peel this onion back and show you this community is being disenfranchised. What can we do about it?
Right.
Because we as a community cannot be as great as we can be if the low income, the uneducated are not taken care of.
Of course.
We're fooling ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The way we, you know, when I was in United Way, one of the things they told us in United Way International, the strength of a community is the strength of its nonprofit sector.
Oh, okay.
So you go and you find a strong nonprofit sector in a community, you'll find a strong community.
Now, is that because nonprofits, by their very nature, have a tendency to be funded by volunteer contributions? Is that part of the relationship, or is it just the mission itself of the nonprofit?
I think it's mission-driven.
Okay.
excuse me. It's mission-driven. But one of the things that I used to tell people all the time, especially here as Christians, I said, this is what God did. God gave us nonprofits to take care of the needy, the poor. That He said the poor will always be with you.
Always.
Right? So what people really needed, and again, I didn't come to preach, but what they really needed was Christ.
Right.
In learning those principles.
Mm-hmm.
However, most people wouldn't listen to that, but they will listen to United Way.
Gotcha.
They will listen to Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
They will
listen.
You see,
I see exactly where you're going.
So guess what? So God had mercy and grace on us and said, I'm going to give you nonprofits. Now feed them. Take care of them. And they'll take care of the poor.
Well, the first thing is we don't have a problem preaching on Kennedy for Alabama, right? And one of the things that we talked about before, I'm thinking about my classmate from the Naval Academy, Pastor James Lavender, who is one of our guests. And he talked about how you will never lay eyes on anybody that God does not love. right? And so I say that in the context of the conversation right now is that we run Kennedy for Alabama. So if we want to take it down a spiritual path, we can take it down a spiritual path. And I'm very appreciative of that because that's the spirit.
Yes.
That's the spirit actually moving and guiding the conversation. And like I said, come next week, we're going to be back to left politics versus right politics.
Right.
So for tonight in particular, I do appreciate you taking it in
yes.
that direction. So one of the things that actually is going to serve as a segue to a conversation we're going to have with Ms. Casey Johnson later on is this notion of perspective, right? So when she comes on, we're going to be talking a little bit about our disabled community
mm-hmm.
And how we need to pay more attention and focus to them. And when I met her over the summer, what resonated with me was because of my path, and it was military and Naval Academy and stuff like that, it was literally, 13 years when I never worked with anybody who was disabled at all.
Wow.
And it was just the environments, that
yeah.
we were in because they weren't fundamentally military environments. And so I use that as an example quite often when I'm talking about issues of race or issues of genders mm-hmm. to say, hey, if you're not sitting in the chair, then your perspective may be different.
Correct.
That doesn't necessarily mean that your perspective is wrong,
right.
but ultimately what we as leaders are trying to do is we're trying to discern truth
yes.
and trying to give people perspective to be able to inform the decisions that they make.
Correct.
And if you think about the fact that earlier in the week we celebrated the life and legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.,
mm-hmm.
how fitting is that to tie into this overall topic of leadership and, as you alluded to, leading with love?
Right. Well, the thing about it is when we talk about leading with love, it covers so many different areas that it would take on a whole show it by itself.
Of course.
But one of the things that we have to remember that people, we all live in a bubble,
mm-hmm.
And I tell people all the time that, I grew up in a bubble. I had a mom and dad who loved me and all these different things. I didn't see a lot of the disparity in the community.
That's right.
Because they sheltered
right.
me from
mm-hmm.
it. All right. But one thing that my mom always did, she always told me, you're blessed. So because you're so blessed, you need to always be looking to help others.
Absolutely.
Always. So part of who I am is always to show people their potential.
Okay.
That's what this leadership is about. This is when I help with youth leadership. I'm trying to show you have the potential. Because a lot of times people just don't know. They hadn't had that push.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about great people, great leaders.
Oh, absolutely.
They just need a little nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you this. Let me give you a little grace. Let me give you a little mercy.
Right.
I'm not judging you. Let me show you how you can get better.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody makes a mistake. Listen, I'm not excusing bad behavior. However, I'm saying I'm just like you. Let's move forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, we're starting to get to the end of the segment here. And I just wanted to give you one last opportunity. If people want to learn more
mm-hmm.
about Leadership Mobile, the program, understanding about the nominating process, et cetera, how would they get that information?
Well, they can go on the website to Mobile United. So that's www.mobileunited.org. And you click on the tab Leadership Mobile, and it will take you to all the pertinent information to fill out and get a part of the next class.
Absolutely. And we have just a little less than a minute before the break. Any final thoughts you want to add about us coming off of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s federal holiday here at the early part
of the
week?
Well, I think the most important part is to understand the mission of what Dr. Martin Luther King was about.
Mm-hmm.
He actually walked in that spirit of love.
Absolutely.
He unified the country. He unified people. It didn't matter where you came from. Always remembering that the truth will set you free.
Absolutely. And that's a nice little bow on the concept of leadership, at least as we are talking about it right now. So for those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, we have been talking to Mr. Ira Bates, who is the Vice President and Community Development Officer for the First Bank and also the Dean of the Leadership Mobile Class of 2021. When you talk about being passionate about something, leadership is one of those things that it's really easy to get passionate about. And when you focus that love of leadership on the love of love and the love of your fellow man, you really have something that can have a positive impact on the community. So, hey, we're about to go into our bottom of the hour break. So stick around, and we'll have a couple more guests here on the other side. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Mm-hmm. It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And we're back. It's Robert Kennedy Jr. and this is Kennedy for Alabama. So for those of you who are just joining us, in the first half hour, we talked to Mr. Ira Bates, not Banks, Bates. And he gave us his perspective on the Leadership Mobile 2021 program, specifically Leading with Love. What a beautiful thing. So now we're going to do something a little new. We are going to go to the phone lines and talk a little bit about a local small business. So you're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama. Who do we have?
Hi, Robert. This is Stephen.
Hey, Mr. Stephen Barnett. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking a few minutes to spend some time with us on air here. So hey, one of the things that we want to do here at Kennedy for Alabama is just give our local small business owners a few minutes to talk a little bit about their business. So can you tell us a little bit about the Flip Flop Bookshop?
Sure. So the Flip Flop Bookshop is a new and used bookstore that we just recently opened over on the other side of the bay in Daphne.
Okay.
It was kind of a lack of great opportunities, great bookstores, spaces outside of the library for people to kind of get together and talk about ideas and be exposed to a bigger diversity of works.
Okay.
And so, you know, and I was looking for a change of pace. So one of those kind of lifelong dreams of opening your own little bookstore. And after, you know, years of wanting it and complaining about not having that great place here in Daphne, my wife told me to kind of put up or shut up.
Hey, it's amazing how our wives do that to us and end up getting us into trouble in the process, huh?
Well, because you're talking about it. So you just come on. Let's get moving.
Well, cool. Well, thanks a lot for that information there, Stephen. So, hey, let's do a few nuts and bolts right quick. So
Sure. Can
you let us know if folks – can you give us the address so folks will know exactly where your Flip-Flop Bookshop is located?
Sure. So we're on North Main Street in Daphne.
Okay.
It's 28851 North Main. It's about two blocks north of Gator Alley if people have been there to walk the trails.
Okay. And what is your phone number?
Sure. It's 251-308-1980.
Oh, well, that's easy to remember. Did I lose you?
Oh, no, I'm still here. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. And then what is your – do you have any social media presence?
Sure. We are on Facebook and Instagram. And obviously on the web at flipflopbookshop.com.
All right. So here's the million-dollar question, which will be my last question for you on this topic this evening. So if I'm sitting here and I have the urge to go to a bookstore and, you know, I'm driving by the Walmarts and the Targets and the Barnes and Nobles of the world, why should I drive past them and come visit you there in Daphne?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm friends with the book business is kind of a small group of people. So I'm friends with a number of different people who work at some of those places that you're talking about. So I would never want to necessarily say something bad about other people who are in the same industry.
No, yep.
But there is something special about the local bookstore that you don't find at those big box stores.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we try to do at the Flip Flop Bookshop is we highlight local authors. One of the first things you're going to see when you walk in the door is an entire cabinet of local books by local authors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, and a lot of them are, you know, by people who live here in the Eastern Shore community or in Mobile that have stopped by the store, introduced themselves, and told us about the stories.
Right.
And a lot of them, because of that, we're able to actually have them, sign a lot of these books. So even though they may be available at other retailers, that special touch, you can come in, we can even tell you about the authors and sometimes their families.
You know, that's actually very interesting because I think that's a consistent theme with small businesses in general, whether we are talking about you know, the flip-flop bookshop, which is the topic that we're talking about tonight, or whether we're talking about any one of a number of different local services that are available. It is that little extra touch that you get by having somebody local providing a platform to share local products and services with us. So, Stephen, thank you so much for calling us and giving us a little bit of insight there on the flip-flop bookshop. To all the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience, if you need you a book, just go over to Daphne and visit Mr. Stephen and see what you can get from him.
There you go.
All right, thanks. Hey, thanks, guys.
All right, man,
thanks
you
so
have
much.
A good weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so with that, we want to thank Mr. Stephen Barnett for calling in and telling us a little bit about the flip-flop bookshop. And so now we are going to go to the phone lines and see who we have on. Hello, you're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama.
Hi, it's Casey Johnson. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Miss Casey Johnson, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great. Glad it's Friday as well.
Oh, glad that it's Friday indeed. Well, hey, I really appreciate you you taking the time to call in.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I love the first conversation you had with your first guest about perspective and inclusion and empathy. That's right up our alley.
Sure, sure. So before I get into the particulars of how it is that we are connected, could you take just a little bit of time to tell the listening audience just kind of, you know, where you grew up, you know, where you went to school and kind of what you're doing now in your day job?
Yeah, I'm a native Mobilian. I consider myself a dual citizen because my family did move to Huntsville when I was a kid, but we spent a lot of holidays in Mobile, still do. I did go to the University of South Alabama, so go Jags, mm-hmm. for undergrad. And I met my husband there. We got married there. I really do love Mobile. But now we live in North Carolina because I wanted to go to graduate school for therapeutic recreation at UNCG. Which is UNC Greensboro, and
right.
I am working now at the Town of Kernersville Parks and Recreation Department as an adaptive and inclusion coordinator and as the town's ADA coordinator. So I work with people with disabilities, veterans, seniors, any underserved populations, specifically in recreation settings, but I assist with other departments as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for providing us with a little bit of perspective on your background. So I actually know your parents. I went mm-hmm. to high school, John Shaw High School, with your dad. And you and I had the opportunity to meet over the summer when you guys were doing a family trip to Gulf Shores. And, you know, it's interesting because we are fortunate and blessed enough to meet a lot of people in a lot of different settings. And it's always interesting meeting your friends' children who have actually grown up and are out in the world and doing good things. But there was something about the conversation that you and I had that really resonated with me, and the idea of having you on the show had been running around my head for a while. And it was really centered around what I said in the earlier segment. So because of my background, going to undergraduate at the United States Naval Academy and spending, you know, 9 years on active duty, for the entire first part of my career, I never worked with anyone who was differently abled. You know, I only worked with people who came within the specification requirements to be on active duty in the military. And so when you brought up to me the concept of thinking a little bit more about folks who experience life a little different than me, I knew that was something that we needed to dive into.
Yeah, well, it's very important for elected officials, but also leaders in the community, to consider the needs of people with disabilities because it is the largest minority group in America because it impacts people of all races, all
Absolutely.
Ages, all gender identities, sexual orientation, socioeconomic statuses, everybody.
Okay.
And really, instead of considering, like we previously have, people with disabilities as a different group than us, if we're typically abled, it's really going to be all of us at some point in our life because even if we don't
Absolutely.
Acquire a disability through an accident or injury, we will lose functioning as we age. So accessibility is an important issue for all of us.
Mm-hmm. So let's pull that thread a little bit more. So
mm-hmm.
if you talk about the, you know, the average person that you would be talking to, just like, you know, you and I were talking, having a couple of drinks by the pool, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's it that you want folks to keep in mind when, you know, interacting with folks who may be different than themselves from a, you know, from a physical capability standpoint?
Yeah, well, we're all humans, right?
Yes.
So since we have typically been segregated still, this is still a population that is still very segregated and still very discriminated against from all aspects of life. Growing up, maybe we weren't around people with disabilities. And it's really important because any challenge that we're all facing in life is amplified by the presence of a disability or for caring for somebody with a disability. So access to like healthcare, access to education, access to jobs, volunteer opportunities.
Okay.
Anytime that if we're a business owner, we should be considering hiring people with disabilities and paying them at least minimum wage or the standard wage for that position, because it's still legal to pay people with disabilities less than minimum wage today in 2021.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think we need to make a distinction, if you will, between physical disabilities and maybe some mental challenges. So that's something
Absolutely.
That I found that most folks aren't familiar with, the concept that you may have differential pay. Is that something that you just explain a little bit more so the listening audience kind of knows where we're coming from?
Yeah, so in policy, it's called sub-minimum wages.
Okay.
And some states have banned it or outlawed it, but it's still in most states that if somebody has an intellectual disability and the employer deems that they're not producing as much work mm-hmm. as an employee that doesn't have a disability, they can pay them, they can fill out a form and apply to pay them literal pennies. Like, it's truly awful.
That's okay. So Casey, we're actually going to go into a break here. Do you have a few mm-hmm. minutes to stay with us on the other side of the break?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll do.
Okay. All right. So for those of you who are just joining us, we have been talking to Ms. Casey Johnson, who is giving us a perspective of some things we should think about when we are considering the differently abled community. So we are going to go into another break here in just a few seconds, and then we will be back on the other side. You know, it's always interesting when I'm trying to get through these last seconds before the music starts. So it has started now, and we're going to go to break, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And we're back to Kennedy for Alabama. So as we go here into our last segment of the evening, we have been on the phone with Ms. Casey Johnson, who has been giving us some perspective on the differently abled community, just some things for us to think about and consider that we may not do on a day-in, day-out basis. So Casey, when we were talking on the break, you actually said something that really resonated with me. And I was actually a little shocked by the distinction that you made. And can you just tell the listening audience a little bit about maybe some of the framing challenges we have right now when it comes to viewing disability more as a charity issue versus a civil rights issue?
Yeah, so frequently people will consider people with disabilities as like needy or mm-hmm. helpless, childlike, and that's just simply not true.
Right.
Their needs with employment or with medications or with education are issues of civil rights.
Absolutely.
And they are guaranteed those rights through the passing of the ADA and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, but those acts are all older than myself
right.
and almost as old as you.
Not quite, but almost.
Not quite. And we're still not there yet, even though we have it on paper
right.
that people with disabilities are equal citizens and have equal access to public life. They really don't still in reality.
You know, it's interesting because as we're coming off of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, you know, my original grounding was from a racial perspective because my mom was older when she had our family. And As a matter of fact, she would have been 1 year older than Dr. Martin Luther King, so she would have been 87 if she was still alive. And so when I think about it from her perspective and what civil rights meant from a racial perspective and how that led into the women's rights movement from a gender perspective and how that kind of broadened into a larger human rights discussion, which includes, you know, Americans with a disability, it all seems like a continuation of the same thing. And some of the stereotypes that were applied racially and to gender were applied within the differently abled community as well.
Yes. And so, yes, that long drudge towards acceptance and access and equality. But also it's so intersectional because, I mean, even this past summer, we had multiple high-profile cases come to light about Black individuals that also had intellectual disabilities mm-hmm. or mental disabilities that were murdered. So by police officers. So
absolutely.
It's all intersectional. We're all complex beings, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for that perspective. I know here's the other question that I wanted to ask you, but a lot of times when we get into these particular issues, we have a tendency to focus on what society is collectively doing wrong. Have you seen through the work that you've done benchmarks of organizations or groups that are doing it right that we can actually learn from?
Yes. So the first place to always look is actual people with disabilities, with chronic conditions that are self-advocates. So the Alabama Disabilities Advocacy Program is very active. They bring lots of court cases to local governments and federal governments, and they work with communities and with community leaders to find solutions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Goodwill Easter Seals of the Gulf Coast is a nonprofit organization that really fills in a lot of service gaps for individuals with disabilities in the Mobile area.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for those two examples. You talk about some of the roles that you have right now in your day job. And how is it that you kind of advocate within the four walls of your scope of responsibility? And is there anything that we can learn from that that we can either incorporate into this program or continue to evangelize when we're in other settings as well?
Yeah. So my biggest role is to problem solve and
okay.
approach a request that somebody has for a modification or an adaptation from the mind frame of why not? So why would I not grant this accommodation or this modification or figure out a solution instead of viewing it as a problem or like an inconvenience or it's just too difficult to figure out or it's not worth figuring out?
You know, it's interesting because that goes back to this notion of perspective as well. I know a lot of times when I'm discussing issues of race, there's this presumption that the person sitting on the other side, if they, in my case, don't happen to be African-American, is inherently bad because they have a point of view that may or may not align to mine. But I like what you're talking about here where it's a little less about thinking of it in terms of a burden and thinking of it a little bit more in terms of an opportunity, right? If you can make somebody's life a little bit easier, why wouldn't you, right?
Absolutely. That's the main point. Yes. Perfect.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So we have a little less than 3 minutes left, and there is one other thing that I wanted to kind of get into since I have you on the phone. It's not every day that I have the opportunity to talk to millennials, and so if you wanted to talk to those of us who are in the proverbial middle age category or even a little bit older, from your perspective of just kind of what you're seeing happening in the world, what advice would you give to us in terms of what we can do better to help you?
Wow, I was not expecting this. I'll actually let you know, I am a 1995 baby, so I am a cusper. I'm either the youngest millennial or the oldest Gen Zer, just depending on what
Oh, wow, okay. Excellent.
So, I mean, you know, my family too, and I love my parents, and we don't always see eye to eye, but something that I've always really appreciated from them is that they have communicated to me that they know my beliefs are based in love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based in like being a radical or being, I don't know, aggressive. It's really, I want to spread as much love as I can towards others and to help people as much as I can towards others. So I don't think I'm alone with that in my generation. I do think we are a very selfless generation, for as much as we're always told that we're being selfish about certain aspects of life.
Right.
I do think that we have a desire to help people and just be considerate, truly.
Yeah, and I'll actually give a separate shout out to your parents as well, to Robert and Lee Wormuth. They were the couples that gave me the opportunity to share some thoughts when I was on the political trail, and they gave me the opportunity to do that in your home. And it's not mm-hmm. every day that you are able to bring together a group of people who, from a principle standpoint, have some differences of opinion, but we're able to get together, we're able to talk about it, we're able to agree on some dimensions while we disagree on others. And it's that example of leadership and that example of love, which is why I appreciate Robert and Lee and the Wormuth so much, because they gave me that opportunity. So thank you.
It's not every day that you have somebody on the political, you know, opposite end of the spectrum from you, like yourself, that is so eloquent and so good at reaching across the table. So, I mean, don't discount yourself either, but yes, go mom and dad, shout out.
All right. Well, thank you, Casey, for joining us tonight. We are coming to the end of our program. We really appreciate your time. We really appreciate the listening audience. This has been another episode of Kennedy for Alabama. And until next week, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr. You guys be good and be safe.